Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Friday, July the 9th, Pope Francis and Anglican leaders urge South Sudan's authorities to work towards peace as the nation celebrates 10 years of independence.
Tensions rise as Lithuania toughens its border with Belarus to deter migrants.
And the Holy See Press Office says the Pope is set to pray the Sunday Angelus at the Gemelli Hospital as he continues to recover normally. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni.
And I'm Father Benedict Mayaki. Pope Francis, Justin Welby and Jim Wallis sent a joint message on Friday to the political leaders of South Sudan, encouraging them to do more to shape a nation in which the dignity of all is respected and all are reconciled. Marking the 10th anniversary of the independence of South Sudan, the religious leaders issued an appeal to those with political responsibility to do more for the good of their people.
In their letter, Pope Francis, the Archbishop of Canterbury and the moderator of the Church of Scotland note the sad predicament of the South Sudanese people, whom they say continue to live in fear and uncertainty and lack confidence that their nation can indeed deliver the justice, liberty and prosperity that is celebrated in their national anthem. The letter that encourages the leaders to make greater efforts to enable its people to enjoy the full fruits of independence recalls another such letter written by the same signatories at Christmas. In that message, they said they were praying the leaders might experience greater trust among themselves and be more generous in their service to their people. Since then, we have been glad to see some small progress, they write. However, much more needs to be done in South Sudan to shape a nation that reflects God's kingdom, in which the dignity of all is respected and all are reconciled. Such an effort, they add, may require personal sacrifice from you as leaders. And they offer their assurances that they stand alongside the Juba government as it looks to the future and seeks to discern afresh how best to serve all the people of South Sudan. And it is with joy and thanksgiving that the three religious leaders also recall the historic meeting of the political and religious leaders of the Northeast African nation at the Vatican in 2019 and the weighty promises made on that occasion. It was during that meeting that took place upon the invitation of Pope Francis to Salva Kiir, Riek Machar and a group of political and religious representatives that the Holy Father knelt to kiss the feet of the President and his deputy, imploring them not to return to civil war, to stay in peace and to go forward. We pray, the letter concludes, that those promises will shape your actions so that it will become possible for us to visit and celebrate with you and your people in person, honouring your contributions to a nation that fulfils the hopes of the 9th of July 2011. And marking the decade since that historic Independence Day, Christian religious leaders call on South Sudanese to work towards a collective future of peace and prosperity as the nation looks ahead to another decade of independence.
The South Sudan Council of Churches, SSCC, in their independence anniversary message, have bemoaned the situation of conflict in the country and expressed the desire that the next decade should usher in justice, peace, freedom, and prosperity for all. They note that it is truly a difficult time for the people of South Sudan, with the context marked with rampant intercommunal conflict, increasing cases of sexual violence, revenge killings, land grabbing, and abductions. All these, the Council of Churches say, destabilize not only peace, but also slows down the socio-economic development of the country. Proposing paths to peace, the Churches Council held up the revitalized peace agreement signed in 2018, noting that it is the most viable framework for peace and a beacon of hope for South Sudanese. However, they lamented that it is unfortunately stifled by a lack of political will. The SSCC, however, assures that the churches will continue to stand with the citizens in advocating for sustainable peace, justice, healing and reconciliation. In addition, the Churches Council expressed hope that the second decade of South Sudan's independence may be a period of new beginnings for the world's youngest country. South Sudan won its independence in 2011 following a referendum in which majority of the population voted to separate from its neighboring Sudan. 2 years later, the country plunged into civil war. A peace deal was reached, but another round of conflicts broke out again in 2016 before a second peace deal, the Revitalized Agreement on the Resolution of Conflicts in the Republic of South Sudan of 2018, was signed. In 2020, the nation formed a transitional government of national unity made up of members of previously warring parties in accordance with the 2018 peace deal. However, the peace deal is tenuous as its implementation has been delayed. Violence between communities has seen an increase, contributing to a dire humanitarian crisis caused by years of fighting in which hundreds of thousands have been killed, millions displaced, and socioeconomic progress has been greatly hindered. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
A Haitian government minister has confirmed that one of the alleged gunmen involved in the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse is a U.S. citizen. A group of armed men reportedly attacked Moïse's private residence during the night of Wednesday and fatally shot the president. James Blears reports.
Haiti's Minister of Elections, Matthias Pierre, says that James Solage, a U.S. citizen of Haitian descent, who's the former head of security at the Canadian Embassy in Haiti and the director of a local charity, is one of six accused assassins arrested. One of the others is also said to be a U.S. citizen with Haitian roots. Prime Minister Claude Joseph says other gunmen are Colombian and Venezuelan and are part of an assembled team of professional killers. The day before he was assassinated in his home, President Jovenel Moïse, who ruled by decree for more than a year, nominated Ariel Henry to be prime minister, but Joseph is still firmly in charge and has declared a state of siege for 2 weeks. National Police Chief Leon Charles says other gunmen involved in the assassination are still being sought. President Moïse's wife, Martine, was shot in the hand, arms, leg and body, but survived. She was airlifted to hospital in Miami in critical condition, but is now described as stable. Investigators want to determine what was behind this carefully planned political killing spree and who are its masterminds. It's not yet known if a government of national unity is going to be formed and when a long overdue presidential election, as well as parliamentary elections, will take place. Lawlessness, kidnappings and murder are commonplace in Haiti. Now Moïse's murder, which has seriously further destabilized society, shows and means that literally no one's safe, that anyone can be reached day or night in whatever place, no matter how supposedly secure. For Vatican Radio, James Blair's reporting.
Lithuania has accused neighboring Belarus of flying migrants into the European Union. As Stefan Boss reports, the government of Vilnius plans to build a barrier on the border and deploy troops to prevent migrants and refugees from crossing illegally into its territory.
Border security forces hold migrants desperately seeking a better life. Here at Lithuania's frontier with Belarus, authorities cope with a massive influx from people fleeing war, persecution and poverty. Hundreds have been making the crossing in recent days. Nearly 800 entered Lithuania from Belarus in the first week of July alone. Many left troubled nations in the Middle East and Africa. Lithuania says it has now declared a state of emergency and will increase troops in the area due to an influx of migrants. Its Prime Minister Ingrida Šimonytė has accused Belarus of flying in migrants to enter the EU.
Because there are travel agencies and direct flights that connect Minsk with Baghdad, for example, and there are agencies both in Belarus and in other countries that operate and attracting tourists, I put that in inverted comma, to Minsk. And we've detained some people who were having actually visas and invitations from Belarus tour operators. Other source is people from African countries, whom we see a significant number during recent days. They claim to be ex-students or students of some high schools.
Belarus decided to allow migrants to cross into European Union member Lithuania in response to sanctions imposed by the bloc. The 27-member EU took the measures after Minsk forced a Ryanair passenger plane to land on its soil and detained a dissident journalist who was on board. I am Stefan Bos.
Pope Francis is recovering normally following an intestinal surgery he underwent on Sunday evening. The Holy See Press Office said today the Pope had a quiet day on Thursday with normal clinical progress. Robin Gomes has the details.
Pope Francis continued to eat regularly and continued his scheduled treatment on Thursday, Matteo Bruni, the director of the Holy See Press Office, said in his latest update on the Pope's health on Friday. The Holy Father is recovering after a scheduled surgery for diverticular stenosis of the colon on Sunday at Rome's Gemelli Hospital. In his statement on the Pope's convalescence, Bruni said he walked in the corridor and resumed his work, alternating it with moments of reading texts. Thursday afternoon, he celebrated Holy Mass in the chapel of his private apartment in the hospital, attended by all those assisting him during his hospitalization. Following a slight increase in temperature the previous evening, the Holy Father did not have any more fever. Bruni said that on Sunday the Pope would recite the midday Angelus prayer from the 10th floor of the hospital. The Holy Father gives thanks for the many messages of affection and closeness that he receives daily and asks that we continue to pray for him, Bruni added. Following the surgery Sunday evening, Bruni had said the Pope was expected to remain in hospital for approximately 7 days, barring any complications. Diverticular stenosis of the colon, which the Pope suffered from, is the constriction or stenosis of the intestine due to the diverticula, or pouches or sacs that form on the walls of the large intestine, narrowing the passage. During the surgery that lasted some 3 hours, the Pope had a left hemicolectomy, which is the removal of the descending colon. Gemelli Hospital, where Pope Francis underwent the operation, was regarded by his predecessor, St. Pope John Paul II, as Vatican No. 3 because he had been there many times. During one of his hospitalizations, he had explained that Rome's St. Peter's Square was Vatican No. 1 and the summer papal residence of Castel Gandolfo on the Alban Hills just outside Rome was Vatican No. 2. Pope John Paul II's first hospitalization was on May 13, 1981, when he was brought there in dramatic circumstances after the assassination attempt on his life in St. Peter's Square. From 1981 to 2005, when he died, he was hospitalized there 10 times. I'm Robin Gomes.
End of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, we invite you to visit our web portal at www.vaticannews.va.
You can also follow us on Vatican News English section Facebook page and on our Twitter account. And you can join us tomorrow at the same time for more news. Many thanks to Patrizio Ciprari in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni.
And I'm Father Benedict Maiacchi. Goodbye.